You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the fifth episode of Season 2 of Warriors Off Court, the San Francisco Chronicles NBA podcast. I'm your host, Warriors beat writer Connor Letourneau, and today I'm joined by Golden State team president Rick Welts, who discusses the Warriors' hot start, the logistics of the Chase Center, and much, much more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
So I'm here with Rick Welts in your really nice office overlooking downtown Oakland. Thanks for joining us today.
Pleasure. Thank you.
So a bunch of topics to address. Obviously, a lot going on with this team right now. Let's talk a little bit about the actual basketball. I know you're in charge of a lot of the off-the-court stuff and Chase Center and all that, but this team has been pretty impressive. This might not come out to early next week, but right now, before the Timberwolves game tonight, The Warriors are 8-1, number one in the Western Conference. The only loss was by 2 points in altitude in Denver. It feels like they're clicking on all cylinders, and it's been a far cry from this time last season. You know, you remember they were struggling with complacency. They started 4-3. Just from your vantage point, what is the difference this season?
Steve Kerr's a genius. But I guess he was a genius last year too, so maybe that's not a difference, but the genius took such a radically different approach to this season that it's hard not to credit that for kind of the whole vibe around the team, right? We kind of pronounced last year that the weight of the world would be on our shoulders every night, slogging through a regular season till we had the opportunity to have some fun in the playoffs. And this year, by declaring that every day was going to be fun and we're just going to enjoy the moment, like, it worked. Amazing. And I feel it across the whole organization. You know, the team personifies that, obviously, but you feel it across the whole organization that it just feels different. It feels like there's less day-to-day pressure, less stress, and somehow everybody's adopted the geniuses theme for the year, that this actually can be really fun.
And it's not just the messaging, right? I mean, you look at what you guys did going back to the offseason. It seemed like Steve and Bob made a concerted effort to get younger, knowing that you were going to need some new energy just to keep things interesting. Obviously, you bring in Cousins. Cousins isn't even playing right now. But I think just the fact that you know that he's coming and he's around the team adds a certain level of intrigue and excitement for the guys. And then having guys like Kevon Looney and Damian Jones and Jordan Bell, who are forced to step into bigger roles, also is a level of excitement, not just for those guys, but for the veterans who are playing with them.
Well, to see the young guys' progress on, you know, right in front of you on a game-by-game basis is really exciting. It's also an economic strategy. We need young contracts to be able to afford what's coming in the future. So there's a business strategy to it, but I think it's one of the intended or unintended consequences has been kind of this jolt of energy that I think everybody's feeling. And you're right, I think the young guys have had a lot to do with it. And it's, you mentioned Cousins. I think there's probably not a question. Our, you know, ticket sales staff gets asked more than, hey, when is Boogie going to start to play? As people are thinking about planning what tickets they're going to buy and what games they're going to see this year, there's clearly going to kind of be a second start to the season
What do they say, out of curiosity? No, are they instructed to say anything?
When is he coming back?
I'm wondering what the ticket sales people say. Are they instructed to say something?
Oh, yeah, we give them an absolute date. They just kind of say what Steve says. He'll be back when he's ready.
Because I have a feeling one of those people would go write something on a blog, and then it would just...
He's going to be back Christmas Day.
Yeah, yeah. As you were touching upon it, it is kind of interesting how when, you know, the performance on the floor, it's not the chemistry and just the overall vibe from the team can carry over to what we experience as media members or around the team every day, what you experience as someone who's in the front office. It's kind of interesting how we all kind of notice that. Like, for me, this season has been a lot more fun to cover because I feel like they're enjoying themselves more.
Well, it's not only been, you know, Steph Curry leading the joy charge on the court, yep. right, and sharing it with everyone. It's that we've had maybe more extraordinary individual performances in the first 10 games of the season than most teams get in a year as right. well. So there's not only been the, hey, you know, the Warriors thumped Chicago. It was like, holy cow, did you see Clay?
And yeah.
I think that, you know, there have been just some amazing individual performances to focus on in the context of the fun that the team's having.
It's interesting that Clay tends to go off when the team is firing on all cylinders. You know, he didn't have a big game like that last season. Obviously, he had the big 60-point game against Indiana the previous season when they were playing really well. It feels like his play is symptomatic of the rest of the team. If he's doing well, the rest of the team's probably doing pretty well because they're moving the ball, getting him open, that kind of thing.
It's a good observation. Although we were winning some pretty good games when he couldn't find the basket.
Yeah, no. Yeah, it's nice to have KD and Steph. And then the last thing that I was thinking about just team-wise was, we were talking a little bit about what they did in the offseason. But the thing that kind of amazes me year in, year out is the moves they make at the fringe, in the fringe of the rotation, that end up panning out and working out a lot of times. Jonas Derebko has been a really nice asset for them. And then Alphonso McKinney, who to me is the best story on this team right now. A guy who was playing in rec league-sized gymnasiums in Luxembourg 3 years ago, who had to pay his own way to try out for a D-League team a couple years ago.
You must have read your own story, though.
who, you know, is living the real-life hoop dreams.
But come on, like, going to Chicago, the homecoming, and buying your mom a house that day?
Yeah, I mean, there's certain stories that they beautiful. Write for you.
Yeah,
that was one.
That's beautiful.
And going to the same high school as the Hoop Dreams documentary. And, I mean, it was like, thank you for just – I don't even have to write this. I can just, you know.
There'll be some ups and downs. He had a couple rough spots last game.
Yeah.
Too,
but it does seem like he fits well with what they're doing. And from your standpoint, I mean, you've obviously been around this league for a very long time. How much do you enjoy just those stories where a guy, you know, kind of comes out of nowhere and ends up – being a factor?
Yeah, that was the best. I mean, I did read your story start to finish this week, and it's like those are the kinds of stories that, you know, kind of restore your faith in that anybody can accomplish anything in this country, right? So and to add in the layers of hometown and mom and all that kind of stuff, it's awesome. But it, you know, it's just amazing what confidence means to a basketball player, right? I mean, he's just a different guy than he's probably been on the court for the last 3 or 4 years, just because however this team does it and however the coaching staff does it, he's walking out there with a different level of belief in himself, and it translates to your play. It's inevitable for any of us. If we're confident when we go to work, we're going to do a better job.
And
somehow he's walking on the court after just a short period of time with this group and approaching it in a much more confident way.
Yeah. So another big thing about this season, obviously it's the last season at Oracle Arena last season in Oakland. It's got to be kind of an interesting standpoint for you guys, because obviously you want to celebrate everything that's happened in Oakland, but it's tough because there's some people that are upset that you guys are leaving. So how do you handle that whole situation?
We have if you could summarize it in a couple of sentences, it would be that we're approaching the season that we're leaving a building after 47 years, but we're not leaving a city. And that's, you know, you're going to judge us by how we do that over the next couple of years. But I think when you see the plans kind of laid out mostly ones that haven't been announced yet, on how we intend to keep 1 foot firmly planted on both sides of San Francisco Bay. And our presence here will be felt in really significant ways, even though we're playing our games at Chase Center in San Francisco. So the best way to do that, we think, is just to celebrate 47 years of amazing memories and moments and fans and players and teams. And every night we're doing that. Every night we're doing something in the context of the game that celebrates something that happened, a team that played there, a game that happened, a particular performance, the fans that have made this such a special environment for the last 47 years. And I think you've heard us talk before, like one of the things that I'm most excited about as we look toward the new arena is there was a big unknown to us about how many of our fans would choose to come with us. There was a lot of fear that they were going to get priced out, different geography, easier or harder to get to the game. And to date, you know, we've had 3 out of 4 fans who've walked in the door at our sales center at Mission Bay and looked at the opportunities to buy new tickets and walked away with season tickets. So mm-hmm. that's an extraordinary percentage. We were hoping maybe 50-60% of people would come over just based on a variety of factors. But when they've seen what it is, when they've seen what it's going to cost, when they've understood how they're going to get there, the vast majority of people are choosing to come with us. And that's what's so special about Oracle. It's like, I don't believe it's the walls of the building mm-hmm. that make that place so special. I think it's the people that have been in that building. And the good news for our team, I think, and for the fans is that they're coming with us.
And I asked this question partly for my own purposes because I'm going to be staying in the East Bay. I'm an Alameda guy, and I'm going to be commuting every day.
You're going to love Bart.
Yeah. No. So, how do you feel like it's going to be logistically at Chase Center with the parking, with the Bart situation? Like, how easy is it going to be for people coming from the East Bay to go to Chase Center during rush hour even?
It's going to be fine, and it's going to get better. It's actually not going to get worse over the short first couple of years that we're there. So, I mean, the key to the site is public transportation, right? Which would have been more of a challenge at Piers 3032. But we actually bought property in Mission Bay that had a muni station already on the site, at the site. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's maybe the most valuable aspect of this piece of property. So what does that mean? That means now, you know, anyone who has access to muni can literally get off 200 feet from the front door, much closer than they could get off BART at Oracle Arena today. Now, so it'll be fine when it starts. Right now, there isn't a BART connection that easily makes that happen. That changes, we're told, in December, a few months after we open, when the Central Subway opens, because the Central Subway connects BART and Muni at Powell Street, mm-hmm. and somebody who has access anywhere in the Bay Area to BART goes to Powell Street, never leaves the station, changes from BART to Muni, and then that new Muni subway goes down that same existing 3rd Street line, so you're 200 feet from the front door when you get off. So that's number one. Second, I don't know if you've noticed, when you go to a Giants game, people actually walk. All right, so people can actually walk from their businesses and their homes to this arena, which mm-hmm. is a condition we don't have right now. We have the biggest bike valet probably in the city, so 300 people can ride their bikes and have a place to store them during the game already taken care of. You know, you add in rideshare, you add in, you know, who knows where scooters are going to be at this point. And you add in the existing parking infrastructure in Mission Bay, which is unique. It's unique because it's a brand new master plan part of the city. Mm-hmm. And all of the construction is new. All of it has structured parking. And all of it has structured parking that's used during the day and not used at night. So, you know, the biggest piece of that is the Giants Lot A. So, you know, that is a 4-block walk along the water, if you want, right. from the Giants Lot A to Chase Center, which I think a lot of people will take advantage of. And there's over 2,000 parking places that close. We, at great expense, spent the first 6 months of the project digging a hole
yeah.
to create almost 1,000 parking spaces below grade actually on site at Chase Center. And there's structured parking across 2 of the 4 sides of our project. We're in conversations with all of the property owners that, that have garages. We want a system where before, if you choose to drive, mm-hmm. we encourage you not to, but if you choose to drive, then you're going to be able to be assigned a parking place and pay for that before you leave home. So you're not going to be driving around looking for a parking space. You're going to be able to know I'm going to this garage and I've already paid for my parking. So I actually think it'll end up being a big yawn in terms of concerns.
Yeah.
It's obviously what people are most focused on, how they're going to get there and what's going to happen when they arrive. But I, you know, I'll go out on a limb saying I think this is going to be one of the biggest pleasant surprises of the project.
One thing I was wondering is, you know, when you have a move like this, obviously you guys are not moving that far. But, you know, given a lot of people have to commute during rush hour and that sort of thing, are there a lot of employees that are thinking ahead and are moving into the city, people who lived out here? Is that something that you guys are talking about a lot?
Yeah, a lot, and we'll be talking about more. But it's happening already.
Yeah.
Potrero Hill has become a very popular place for some of our young employees to live, which is pretty cool because they could actually walk to work from there as well. So. But listen, I'm not trying to make it just sound like a perfect story. I don't know if you've heard, but there's an affordability issue in the Bay Area.
Sure. That's why I don't live in San Francisco. Yeah.
So, you know, we're trying to figure out what needs to change to make it a good experience for our employees too. I think things like staggered work hours, which we don't do now, I think is a possibility to try to avoid some of the peak traffic times.
So you guys have talked about that?
We're talking about that. We're talking about a lot of things related to how employees will come to work. And our most visible employees also have to figure this out too, right? Our players and coaches also have a little bit of a different logistical challenge when it comes to coming to work when we move to San Francisco. And a few of the guys are thinking about it now.
Yeah.
Honestly, that's a long ways away for an NBA player to be thinking about where they're going to be next season living.
It seems like almost all of them live in the East Bay or live
right
in this general area.
Yeah, I know
a couple of them have places in SF. It's well chronicled that Steve bought a house in San Francisco, so he's obviously getting a jump on
ahead
it.
Ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
Joe Lincoln keeps looking, but he doesn't. He apparently hasn't found a spot for it.
I'm sure he can find something. that's awesome. And one thing that's got to be nice, too, is that you're going to have everything together. You know, I know for me it'll be nice just to have the practice facility with, you know, I could come interview you and then go straight to the game and not have to commute somewhere else. That's got to be nice for you guys as well.
Well, but it's core to the Warriors' philosophy, right? Because, as you know, majority of teams don't have their practice facility at the same place they have their arena. And we do that here in Oakland. And we think it's been, from a cultural standpoint and a success standpoint, been really, really important. You know, 100 feet from where we're sitting right now, Bob Myers' office, Steve Kerr's office, the basketball operations offices. So we think having everybody come to work in the same place every day creates a different culture in the organization, and having the players and coaches part of that, we think enhances the opportunity to be successful. So it is at great expense that we, and you make the right point because I didn't mention that we are building a brand new practice facility as part of the Chase Center development. So, you know, Steph Curry is going to come to work when he's in the Bay Area every day in the same place. Use the same locker room, use the same training facilities, use the practice court, and you know, whether or not Beyonce is playing a concert, you know, 100 feet away from the locker room or not, the players will be coming to the same place every day. We just think culturally it's really important.
And you've obviously accomplished a lot in your career. There's a reason why you're in the Hall of Fame. Congrats on that, by the way. Belated congrats. Where did the whole Chase Center process rank for you in terms of the hardest things you've done in your career?
There's no number two.
Yeah, is it by far?
It stands by itself in a whole different category. I wish people could be part of the process every day just to see how hard it is to do a project of this significance in San Francisco. It is not for the faint of heart. It requires like unbelievable perseverance by the people who are paying the bills, which in our case are not taxpayers or cities or counties. It's the ownership of the Warriors that are picking up every penny. We're talking about the land too. I mean, this is not like public property. Public property. This is privately purchased property and 100% privately financed project. I don't recommend it to any other city because I'm not sure the economics would work. These things need to be subsidized to the tune of a few hundred million dollars to make the economics work, just as they were in Sacramento, just the new building in Milwaukee. Same thing, there's kind of a $300 million sweet spot to make the numbers work. But, you know, we've just kept our heads down and gone over every hurdle. We've gone to every hearing. We've made our case. We've been able to win support every step of the way. And now we can see the finish line. And I will tell you, as a business, the benefit of that when it's all over is we're not, you know, you look at some of the issues that sports teams have, and they're often related to the landlord of their arena or stadium, which usually is a government entity, or at least the government entity has a big part in deciding how that is operated. We don't have any of that. Right. So when it's been a pretty torturous path to now. But when it's all said and done, you know, our operating model is going to look very different than most teams have in their stadiums or arenas, because we really will have the ability to manage every aspect of it.
Yeah, that to me might be the most important part of this whole aspect. And I feel like a lot of people don't pay enough attention to that aspect of it. I think there's probably some fans out there that maybe aren't even aware of the fact that this is privately funded, and that there's no, you know, there's no taxpayers are going to have to pay for this building. That's obviously a very hot topic in the Bay Area right now with other teams and just throughout sports right now, where you know a lot of cities don't want to have to foot the bill just to have a team. And you know, we were just in Seattle a few weeks ago, and that was obviously a big reason why the Sonics aren't there anymore. To you, is that probably the thing that you're most proud of about this, the fact that it was that you didn't need to, or is there something else?
I don't think so. I think we're most proud of actually how it's going, and it sounds corny, how it's going to enhance the lives of people in the Bay Area.
Yeah,
I love arenas and stadiums because in my mind, what those things are places that create memories. Like I grew up in Seattle going to games with my father. Those are my greatest childhood memories of going to a game. And, you know, in San Francisco, we've never had one of these. So a world-class sports entertainment arena. So I think more than anything, it fundamentally over decades and generations is going to create memories that people will carry their entire lifetime. So how we got there will probably get forgotten.
Yeah.
But I think what actually we're going to be the most proud of, at least I'm going to be the most proud of, is the contribution it's going to make to creating great memories for people.
And I actually haven't gotten the chance to talk to you since the Seattle trip. And you obviously were very instrumental in making that happen. And I thought it was by far the coolest preseason game I've ever covered.
Right.
It was really fun. Just everything that went into it with Kevin Durant wearing the Sean Kemp jersey. And you could tell what it meant to the city. It was a really electric environment. How did you feel everything went?
I was getting a chill listening to you describe it. Because it was for Seattle, it was a real... You know, it ended so badly with the Sonics that it was really the first time people had come back in a joyful way to be able to celebrate their love of NBA basketball and kind of demonstrate, you know, hello, we're here, we're available, we would love to do this again, and what an amazing outlet for that. I mean, ESPN wasn't going to broadcast that game, but when they figured out, like, holy cow, we got to be there. And for Kevin too, I think it was important. And from the day we got him, it was something I was trying to get done, just because I think what he meant to that city, and maybe what that city and those fans meant to him at you know, his entry point into the NBA, it set him on a course that's worked out pretty well. And I think for him, the green sneakers or the Sean Kemp jersey, and just this adoration from the fans that were in the building, you know, that it's kind of tying up a chapter in your life, I think, that I think he'll remember really fondly.
One thing that's really interesting about Kevin is you know, he's obviously lived in a bunch of different places throughout his life, but getting to know him a little bit, each stop has meant a lot to him. I got the chance to go to Austin, Texas with him last January and got to see how much that city and that community means to him. And then being in Seattle, you saw what that meant to him. And the interesting thing is, when you think about it, he was only in Seattle for what, eight months?
Yeah.
8 months, really?
Right.
And he was at Texas for 8 months, right, something like that. But I think it says
but
a lot.
You probably remember your first job, too.
And that, exactly. And his first my job. First job will always, I covered Oregon State for the Oregonian, and I'll always have a soft spot in my heart for that program just because it was like my entry into this business. So I get it, you know.
Yeah.
But don't you think it kind of says something about him, too, that, you know, he is invested in each stop he makes, you know?
I think it absolutely is. And it wouldn't surprise you that the first person we asked, like, would you like to do this, maybe a year and a half ago, was Kevin. I was like, right, oh, man, that would be a great experience.
Right.
And you're right. I think he's a thoughtful guy about how his life has progressed and what each one of those stops, not maybe the geography as much as the experiences he had when he was there, helped shape who he is today. So he maybe expresses that more than a lot of people do. We should all probably feel that way.
Yeah. And I guess that's really all I had for you. Is there anything else that you felt like, you know, should be discussed, or just that you wanted to hit on just to the fans?
I would just say, for somebody who's been doing this, you know, since they were 16 years old, we all sit around here saying, let's appreciate the moment. Right? Mm-hmm. Let's really understand what a rare thing that we have a front row seat to experience is happening in front of our eyes. And, you know, hopefully we can keep it going for a really, really long time. But history would tell you at some point, maybe it won't quite be this good. And I think that what we're being treated to, if you love basketball on a night-in basis, is just, you know, something that is so rare and so infrequent in the history of sports that, you know, part of it is just like to try to stop for a moment and smell the roses and really understand that this is a moment, you know.
Yeah.
This is really a moment that very, very few fan bases, cities, regions, and teams ever really get to experience, and we get to see it every night, so.
Yeah, I was doing a radio interview the other day, and it was after the Clay's 14 three-pointer game, and I basically told him, I was like, I just hope you guys take a second and realize how ridiculous this is. Mm-hmm. This is my third season on the beat, and I've now covered two players on the same team break NBA three-pointer record. It's obviously not an easy thing to do, because no one else in NBA history has done it, but I think it's easy for all of us to kind of get used to it a little bit and just say, oh, well, yeah, I mean, he's Klay Thompson. Of course he did that. Well, it's still an unbelievable feat that no one has ever done. So
enjoy it. And, yeah, and the way it comes about, which is different than it would happen at any other team,
right,
to see the guy whose record he's breaking be the biggest cheerleader to help him get to that point.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know who this Steph Curry guy is,
it's almost like he's not really human, because I mean, I think if you're giving most people truth serum and you said you broke a huge record and a guy on your team broke your own record, you're going to genuinely want to be happy for that guy, but probably in the back of your mind, it's like, man, like, I'm not the record holder anymore. I don't think he feels that. It's almost like he's not human, you know. It's impressive.
He has a maturity about him and a view of the world that's different than anybody I've ever met. And,
yeah,
you know, that's what makes him, one of the things that makes him so special.
Well, Rick, I appreciate you taking the time. It's always good chatting with you.
Fun. Thank you.
And I look forward to catching up with you later this season.
Great.
Thanks. This show is part of the San Francisco Chronicle Podcast Network, and our theme music is courtesy of the Free Music Archive. The show is produced by me and King Kaufman. For more Warriors coverage, you can follow me on Twitter at @Con_Cron. Check out all of my coverage at sfchronicle.com. Also, follow Warriors Off Court on iTunes, and if you have some time, give us some feedback.